This is the fifth of five reels interviewing Mrs. Amanta Hansen in her home in Fairbanks, summer of 1973.
Why, I think I can make an interesting book.
Now, this Ursa Major that I have here is 1916.
16 and 17. Well, I have the other issues, but they quit. I think they quit putting it out after...
Said, volume 5, published annually by the students of Fairbanks High School, Fairbanks,
Alaska.
Yeah,
and that's a picture of the old school, too.
Yeah. And the high school faculty, F... Is that an X? Fair, F-A-R-R-E-R. Superintendent and high school principal.
Farrar.
Farrar.
Mm-hmm. He's and been dead quite a number of years, too, I understand.
Miss Daphne Moody was mathematics, German, 8th grade teacher. Ralph D. Matthews, Miss Henrietta
Myrick.
Now, that was his faculty.
Yeah. That Ralph Matthews, he looked like I always pictured Ichabod Crane might look like from the Washington Irving's stories.
Yeah.
And
Miss
Murray, and Miss, and homely and everything else, and ungainly. Miss Murray, she was the sweetest thing. But if you deserved a 74 and passing was 75, you got a 74. She was very fair that way. She wouldn't stretch it one way or the other.
Well, this is a really nice book. It gives quite a bit of...
It gives a lot of information.
A lot of information on Fairbanks.
I've loaned this book to... this man really wanted to make his thesis for the master's on Miss Keenan, I think, more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I've told him that they could keep it a little longer because he hasn't gone over them as much as he should. She's one of the Rebecca's now, you see.
Yeah, here's the editorial staff for the Ursa Major. Mm-hmm. Editor-in-chief is Elmer Anderson. Assistant editor, Rodney Johnson.
Yeah, you've heard of the Anderson's Laundry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, he was the boy. And then he had a mentally deficient girl who was in a wheelchair quite a bit of the time, Florence mm-hmm. Anderson. And all that family, the whole family, has been dead now for quite a number of years.
An athletic editor of this publication was Howard Logan.
They used to live on the corner of 3rd and Knuckle.
And the joke editor, Alta Porter.
Alta used to live on down on the Wendell near the near Clay Street. And her father, the family had gone outside, and the father had driven to Valdez in their car and was going to board the boat there, and he had got a wire from Fairbanks making him an offer for his car that made it worthwhile for him to drive back to Fairbanks and take the boat the long way around to go stateside, and he was lost on the Sophia.
Oh.
That was in 1918.
Yeah. And the exchange editor, Wilma Carlson.
She was the only one still alive now and from my class.
The business staff is Virgil Myers, Alton Nordale.
Virgil Myers' father
Earl
was a dentist, and he had offices. He had his offices above where the First National is now.
And Alton Nordale is the brother
To Arnold Nordale.
Arnold and Jalmer and
yeah.
And the father and mother. What was
That was Tony Nordale.
Tony Nordale.
Uh-huh, and they had their first business there was on First Street between where the USO is now and Lacey.
Their first hotel.
Yeah, it was three-story.
Since you've been here this summer, have you heard any discussion or talk about rebuilding of the Nordale Hotel?
I haven't been around too much.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get my phone put in before the 3rd of July.
I see.
And I got such a doggone high bill from the... utilities was over nearly $70.
Is that right?
I can't understand it. Bob looked at it and he said, you better take that up with the management.
Yeah.
Of course, I asked for a private phone and everything. They connected up the power and everything, but Gosh, I don't know exactly where I've got that bill right now, but it's in my...
It's pretty high. What about Earl Foster? He was another member of the business staff.
His mother was one of them. He graduated the year before I did. And his mother was Mrs. O'Flanagan. You've heard of her. And mm-hmm. She was one of the pioneer women, too. And they went up the Tanana River itself, way up to Nebesen and those places. They had a trading post or something up there for a number of years before O'Flanagan died. And of course, Laura's been dead a good many years, too, but she was still a member of the Pioneer Women and active when I joined it.
I see in the department editors that Amanta Tonseth was a sophomore representative. This was in 1916.
Mm-hmm.
So.
A lot of that stuff I've forgotten.
Yeah, I was just reading through some of those names. Oh, you have advertising in here. Here's the model restaurant.
Oh, yes, the model.
American Yukon Navigation, Smith's Gun Store, J.G. Moore. This is a valuable and interesting book. Fairbanks Telephone Company.
Yes.
Bert the Taylor.
The telephone office used to be across Second Street, facing north, from about where... One of the offices, or one of the things here is of the NC Company. It was all around one third of the way, the block up from between Turner and Barnett. And then they moved to a building that was right across from Turner, from the federal building. Right across from where I was working, and then that burned mm-hmm. one year. I was working there, and had trouble getting to the kitchen there because the fire was still in progress. And that I had the phone here at the time, and they had to, when they got the phone system working again, well, instead of being four people on the line, well, they had eight.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, oh boy. You had an important phone call to make. You had trouble getting it through.
We had an eight-party line at out in Yankovich Road there for years.
You did?
Yeah. We finally... Well, that's a long story, but we finally got a private line.
Right.
I see something that you wrote in this 1916 Ursa Major. It's kind of a funny little notice that you have. I'm going to read that. All who are interested in... It's titled Notice! Exclamation point. All who are interested in the forming of a new club for natural-born freaks are invited to the home of Honorable Ed B. Davis next Saturday night at 8. The Society's aim is to prevent harm to beasts and to promulgate the welfare of individuals who are born freakish. Miss Audrey Rose will give a lecture on how to get skinny. Mr. Nuppy will read an article on how pants are made to grow. Everybody welcome. Signed.
Oh, he had he wore knickerbockers for an awful long time.
This is written in the English and the words are misspelled. Obviously pretty funny.
Well, that was, I didn't write that, but maybe they put my name on it. But Abby's one of those that died. For a while, every news minor I picked up, it seemed like it had something about a death of somebody.
Yeah.
So many died that I'd known for 56 years.
So many.
I'd known Avakov ever since he came to the country.
Well, Avakov told me one time he walked from Valdez to Fairbanks, and he was, of course, he was from Russia, and he didn't understand English very well.
Mm-hmm.
And some fast talkers conned him out of everything he had, and I remember his telling me that all he had was the clothes he had on, and his socks got a hole in the heel, and he took his shoes off and just turned the socks around a little bit, and by the time he got to Fairbanks, he had kept turning his sock around until he had it all worn out.
Probably so.
Did you ever take the stage down to Valdez?
No, I never did. I've never been to Valdez.
Never been to Valdez?
No, I haven't. Not even, we put out, the one trip I made by boat, we put into the port of Valdez, but it was outside there was a bend or something in before the town, so I have never been that far. I haven't been to
Chittenden either. Outside, when you lived here in Alaska, did you travel out to the States ever?
My first trip was in the spring of 32. I'd been ill, and the doctors thought it would be a good thing if I went outside, and I had to...
When you were first married, did you live out in the creeks, or...
We went down...
Live in Fairbanks?
The morning after we were married, took the train to Dunbar, and went down to the Manly Hot Springs District, and then over to Tofty. Mm-hmm. Where he had a cabin. And
did he have mining property there?
He had mining property over there. And we I helped stake a lot, considerable of ground, and then when we separated, I assigned my half interest, undivided interest in all the mining property and everything I had down there to my three sons.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Do they still have property?
As I never ask questions about my ex because I just don't care to know about anything about it. He's way up in the 80s. He's 12. He was over 12 years older than I, which made a gap in the ages, you know. And maybe that's why we didn't get along so well either.
Mm-hmm.
But the less said about our marriage, the better.
No,
except I gave him three sons, and those sons have given me 9 grandchildren, and so far I have 5 great-grandsons.
Now, you told me when your sons were born, were they all born here in Fairbanks or in the creeks?
No, they were born here.
Here in Fairbanks.
Though I think my husband would have preferred if I'd just gone out in the woods and had them out there. Because he understood that that's the way they did in Sweden.
Well, that's the way the native women would do
Yes. It
sometimes, too. But,
as it was, if I hadn't had good medical care, I would have died with the first one. The second one slipped out easy, but the third one, I hemorrhaged.
And you were sick, too.
I had the flu just before that.
Yeah.
And, I do have the three sons to show for the 9 grandchildren, and the 5 great-grandchildren.
So you retired here from the...
In 63.
In 63, and since then you've been spending your winters...
I've been spending my winters slightly warmer.
Where it's warmer.
And
you've missed a couple of summers coming back up here, though, haven't you?
I missed the summer of 66. I had been in a car accident that spring, and... I had stopped at a stop sign, and I just couldn't see any cars coming, and just was going across the street, and a car load of kids had evidently turned the corner just beyond me or something, and just plowed into the side of my car. And I have no recollection of going to hospital or anything else. I was unconscious at the time, but my car was totaled out.
And were you badly injured?
I was, the ribs were broken on the side of my left side of my back at the time I was driving, and it was hit mm-hmm. from the left side, and most of the ribs were broken alongside the spine, and I was hospitalized for a while, and then doctor I had, who was also a surgeon, he just happened to be an emergency that when I was brought in there. He found out that my gallbladder was haywire. And, of course, 66 was the year that Medicare started,
mm-hmm.
on the 1st of July. I entered the hospital on the 6th of July and had surgery on the 7th to remove my gallbladder. And so I wasn't able to come north at all that summer.
You spent considerable time in the hospital.
I have spent a lot of time in the hospital, and... when my last doctor, the one I'm very well pleased with down there now, he was asking me a question, and I said, when you examine my body, I said, you'll see that I have been in and out of hospitals quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, of course, this gallbladder surgery nearly to the spine on the right side and underneath the breast.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was... cut up pretty much below the waistline,
mm-hmm.
and I've got all kinds of scars, as you can see. I haven't worn stockings now for the last number of years because they bother my feet. And when I went back to Mesa there one time, new ground for the new church was just being built, broken or something, for the new Presbyterian church over there. And I hadn't seen it or anything, and they were dedicating it after I came back in the fall. And that was in the fall of 64, I believe. And I was going over to the dedication. It wasn't very far from the apartment I had rented for the winter. And I didn't see a lighted, what I thought was a doorway. And I was tired, and I thought I went from this, onto that sidewalk that led to that. Instead of that, it was a plate glass window.
Oh, my goodness.
And I walked right into it. And you can see this inverted J, a scar. And I dedicated that church all right that night with my own blood off all over that thing. And they had to get the ambulance, and I rushed over to the hospital. And the doctor, very nice doctor, took care of me. But it has injured the toe next to the big toe on that foot. So that I don't have the control of that particular toe.
I see.
And then I was very badly hurt in 67 when I was driving south from here after the flood. And it was in September. And on September 22nd, I was just driving from, never forget that date, from Fort Nelson toward Fort St. John on the way down to Washington State. I was going down to the Phoenix area again then. I'd been living over in Mason before that, for the winter, since I retired in 63. And I had, while I was waiting for the delivery of my first car, I went with a group of Odd Fellows and Rebeccas to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the fall of 63. And then, of course, this was quite a bit later. And in 67, then, when I was driving south, I had my car loaded to the gills and with stuff I was hoping to go over more after I got down there. And a fellow driving north in a borrowed car blacked out, and his car hit mine head on. And the tracks showed that I had my lights on and that I was far to the right of the road. In fact, I was going rather slow because I was on the lookout for roadhouse. I don't know if they call them roadhouses down there or not. But so I could have some lunch and a cup of coffee just to rest me in that. When all of a sudden this fellow hit me head on. And he had blacked out, and so he was relaxed and totaled out both cars. He got by with a broken arm, but this right and left leg was broken, so they put in a cast way up to the groin. And the right ankle was broken for the second time. I'd broken that in 69. And you saw this inverted, it's M when I look at it, and W, when I guess, or then the other way around. My chest bone was broken, and an antique cross that I was wearing at the time was broken, or cracked, and it later broke. And I'm still hoping I can get that fixed. It was a cross that my aunt, one of my mother's sisters, had given me. And she'd gotten it when she was confirmed, and she was older than my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was way in the 100, up in the 100 years old. And I still have the pieces, and I'm still hoping that my eyesight will improve so that I can see to fix it myself, because I think I've got the material to fix it with.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a Mrs. Fix-It. Of course, when I got my divorce, I couldn't very well, with three grown sons, I couldn't very well take my maiden name. I should have, though. But by that time, I was already implicated with the government in the retirements and this and that and Social Security and everything like that. And you do accumulate a lot of numbers as you get older. Boy, oh boy, I don't know how many numbers I've got. How many you got?
I don't know, but I've got quite a few. Between Social Security and telephone number.
Well, I got the telephone number here, which changes every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have the one in in Phoenix, but I keep that same number because my phone number down there, is on the vacation status. And I think my bill for this last month was $198.
Oh.
Something like that.
That's a little different than the $70 bill you got up here.
Yeah. And I'll have to take that to the office someday when I'm...
Yeah, you should talk to him about it because that seems too high. That's
it's some part of it there that Bob couldn't understand when he looked at it. If I could lay hands on it right offhand, I'd show it to you right now, but I'm not sure... Just sure whether it's over there someplace or in my room or just where I've got it. I might have one of my suitcases because I've been trying to put things in the suitcase that I don't want to forget.
Yeah.
And last year I walked away with two different sets of earrings. I had one with me and one was left here, but I found them both when I came back. So now I got two pair of earrings where I had just two different pairs before.
Yeah.
You saw that pair that I wore the other day, the Maori god earrings?
No, I didn't notice that.
They're right in the...
Your brother, Einar Tomseth, was a city clerk here in Fairbanks for many years.
He was.
Tell me a little bit about him and some of the jobs he held in Fairbanks.
Well, he had worked, before he went to college, he had worked in a grocery store, which he later bought. And then he worked as a grocer for Lavery and Bailey, which was then on the corner of Third and Cushman, where Penske's store is now. Bob Clausett's place is now. And if you remember that old store there. And then they moved it to 2nd and Cushman.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was with the city clerk and magistrate for a long, long time. And one of the times that he was still city magistrate, there was a commotion. He lived down, in the lower end of First Avenue, across from where the powerhouse is now. They moved his house since then. And there was one night, it was a commotion out there in front, and he went out there, and there was some fighting. I forget just what the things was, because I heard it secondhand. And he corrected the main instigator of this trouble, and this fellow was sassing him and everything else, and he called for my brother's, or then he had Ethel do it, and called for the police, and the police came. And the next day, or the day following that, was probably the same day, the fellow was very, very much surprised when he was brought before the magistrate to find out that that was the guy that he'd been sassing and everything the night before in the magistrate's yard.
Yes.
And he was also a U.S. Marshal for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He was a U.S. Marshal under Joe McDonald in 1944. And we had, of course, that was when things were still kind of hot around, hard to get transportation and everything else. And we had a woman, a prisoner, and a couple of insane, a man and a woman, I believe it was, to take to the States. And Joe McDonald told him to take me along as matron. That was before I started working for the government. So I made this trip with him. We had to wait for about a week for the weather to get so that we could go. There was...
Did you fly outside?
We flew, yes. There was six or seven of us in the party, and we couldn't get enough seats on one of the American planes, so we had to fly with the Canadian Pacific. And we flew to Whitehorse, and on a Saturday. Next day was Sunday, and they did not fly, and I don't know if they still hold to that, in Canada on Sunday. So we had to lay over Sunday, and we had the prisoners and insane jailed, and so we could get our rest and everything. And we took off at midnight on the right after Sunday and flew down to Vancouver. It was the most beautiful flight I think I've ever had. We were on the other side of the coastal range, whichever it was, whatever name it is there in Canada, between there and Vancouver. The full moon was shining on the top of those mountains, and it was just beautiful. Of course, as we neared Vancouver, all the windows were darkened. We couldn't look out at all. It was wartime. Mm-hmm. And then we got to Vancouver, and we got housing for the prisoners till we could make arrangements to go on to Seattle. We went by bus from Vancouver then to Seattle. And then to Portland, where we turned our insane over. And we didn't know what we might have to turn the prisoners, a prisoner we had for Alderson, the woman, over to another party that was going east at the time. But it seemed like because of our delay, because of weather here and getting out of Fairbanks, it was a lot of snow at that time, mm-hmm. that year. It was March and of 44. And so just happened that we got clearance to go ourselves. And we went by train then from Portland to Alderson, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And after we deposited our prisoner in Alderson, we won't mention any names, well, we went on to Richmond, Virginia, by train, and then took a ferry over to Norfolk, where my sister-in-law was living at the time. My brother was over in the South Pacific with the war, with mm-hmm. the battleships and that. He was in an officer in the Navy. Yes. And from my second son had gone south the year before to enlist in the Air Corps, and he was an air cadet. And he'd been recently, after we'd reached the States, he had been assigned to Maxwell Field out from Montgomery, Alabama. So from Norfolk, I took a bus and went to Montgomery. And he was given special permission, though he'd only been there a short time, to see me, seeing I'd come all the way from Alaska. And I got to see him, and I still have a few pictures from that, but I don't have it right handy, that were taken when I was down there. And I was allowed to spend a little more time in the hotel at Montgomery. The man that was running the hotel and his wife were very, very nice to me. And when they heard I was an Eastern Star, well, they knew head one of the Eastern Star for the whole state. And, of course, it was a gas shortage and everything.
Yes.
But he contacted her, and she arranged for the treasurer of either her chapter or then the whole thing, I don't know which, to take me for a ride. And the three of us went for a ride all around Montgomery, which I thought was very, very nice of them.
Mm-hmm. Certainly was.
And I still have a booklet that was given me from that tour that mm-hmm. I think I maybe have thrown it out just lately because I've got to cull out a lot of things here. From the way I've been was feeling the first couple of weeks, first month I was here, why I've had the arthritis so bad, but mm-hmm. badly I guess it would be. I have to use them. Seeing I'm an ex-school teacher, I'd watch my language and get the proper.
Yeah.
But it's been so badly, hurting so badly, I'd wake myself up screaming at night from pain. But lately, I haven't had those extreme pains.
Mm-hmm.
I still had them when the Rainbow Assembly was meeting here. And I went to one of the meetings, which I was entitled to, and two of my granddaughters were up from Anchorage Ford. They're Rainbow Girls from there. So I got to see them very briefly, but I was going out the next day, and I'd had so much pain the night before that I just didn't risk it. And then they left on Tuesday. This was Sunday. I got mm-hmm. to see them from just briefly, but I'll see them now as I go south again.
And then, but back to Einar Tonsett, he retired from the city as city clerk. Is that
he was he had been one of the marshals, mm-hmm. and then when there was a change of the powers that be, I think it was Dixie Hall that succeeded him mm-hmm. as in the marshal's office, and then he got in with the city, uh-huh. and then he was still with the city when he retired. And
then he moved outside.
And then he moved outside. Mm-hmm. And then they bought a home in Spokane to be near their daughter. But she's moved around a lot since then. And now she's 17 miles from where I am down there in Arizona.
Then he died, you said, five years ago.
He died 5 years ago. I think it was last month. I'm not too sure of the date. And his wife was kind of peeved at me because I didn't want a picture of his grave. But when we are dead, mm-hmm. it's just like when I leave this house for the last time. There are a lot of memories of me in the house, but I'm not there. Mm-hmm. And the same way, when I die, my spirit leaves this body of mine. There may be a lot of memories attached to it, but my soul will have gone to better places, just like when I leave mm-hmm. here, I'm going to a better place because it's warmer and it's lots more convenient than where I am right now. Mm-hmm. And I very seldom get out to my mother's grave, which is just a half a block from my backyard. Mm-hmm. Because it's she's not there, and it just tears up.
The body is there, but the spirit isn't.
Well, what's left of the body after nearly 39 years in that grave? Mm-hmm. We buried her the day after she died because we couldn't see her. But she'd been so slow in dying and everything, and her body was so pain-wracked. A few days before she died, I'm not the crying kind, never mm-hmm. have been. The doctor had told me to be very careful not to let her walk because the cancer was in her bones too. It was all over her system by that time. And they were afraid that she would break a hip bone or something and be in still more pain. And she was suffering enough as it was. The doctors would come here periodically to see her and they'd leave the they'd leave the prescriptions at the drugstore for me to pick up for just so much of the morphine. Mm-hmm.